Welcome back to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. The Sunday Toronto Star had a headline, Diplomacy on the Run, Frenetic Meetings, Short Tempers, Frank Talk, and Rushed Photo Ops, Behind the Scenes as Trudeau and Global Allies Scramble to Respond to Russia's War on Ukraine. The word diplomacy is in there. That's what we do need. But I don't think this is diplomacy. This is a war party trying to circle the wagons, in my opinion. And this is Justin Trudeau. Diplomacy should involve a desire to de-escalate the current situation. The UN General Assembly resolution that has been referred to as a sort of starting point for US attempting to leverage and arm twist people, countries, states into following behind their flag. That called for de-escalation. In order to de-escalate, you have to have dialogue and you have to have diplomacy. But here we have a prime minister of Canada and he's meeting with leaders, having, as this article says, photos taken. And the article is very revealing in that the one leader he met who I would say probably is engaging in a bit of diplomacy. I mean, real diplomacy is, of all people, the Chancellor of Germany, Mr. Scholz. In that, Scholz, as the article says, is the one who has actually spoken to the President of Russia. You see, we've already reached the phase of mental blackout where the only language used in our quarters is demonization, contempt, rage, etc., which may be legitimate or not, but it is not diplomacy. It doesn't lead to diplomacy because, for example, if you're Scholz and you pick up the phone, you can't start saying nasty things about your counterpart. You actually, that's the guy. He leads country of Russia, and you need to speak to him. And what would be your goal? What is it you want? As I said, I would title this program, Does Anybody Actually Want Peace? It's one thing to say, you know, well, peace is our goal and all that. But do you want it or not? If you do, you're going to have to enter into dialogue and into diplomacy. I think the first question for all Canadians should be, why can't the Prime Minister of Canada speak to the President of Russia? Because he has not. And of course, I have to say, I guess neither has the leaders of Denmark, I guess, and Holland, but we're talking about the Canadian people. I mentioned a while ago, most of them work for a living. By the way, and as I also said, they have their own memories, their own idea about what has been going on in history since it is working people who lost the most lives. And they tell stories amongst themselves that the Toronto Star isn't terribly interested in. But if you're in a real country that has real self-respect, why can't you talk? Why can't your leader talk to the leader of the country that is allegedly the problem or central to the problem? And the answer is NATO, actually. If you think about, say, Brazil, India, China, Tanzania, when they speak, when the leader of China speaks, he speaks for China. When the leader of NATO speaks, he, she speaks for Canada. And when Joe Biden speaks, he speaks for NATO. That's where we have a problem. If we like to throw the words democratic around and our values, we have a deputy prime minister who says our values, and it's freedom versus autocracy or whatever. But why don't we have a voice? And is it possible for our voice to contradict our president? I say our president, Joe Biden, president of Canada. He makes all the big decisions. We have people who in the American Civil War, they called them fire eaters. Most of them were in the South, by the way. They were called the fire eaters. They didn't want to fool around. They want to get on with it. It's time. They wanted to duke it out. Duke rhymes with nuke. You have to understand, there's this play acting about war going on here by people, I have to tell you, who don't seem to realize Canada doesn't have a nuclear weapon. We don't have one. We don't have one, and we're not permitted to have one. You can ask our president why. I'm not really sure. But I'm glad we don't. But on the other hand, if you're going to be talking about no-fly zones, and our president has nukes, and the Russians have nukes, and you start getting into that territory and talking about how easy it is to do and how you wouldn't mind doing it, which is half of the political columnists now on the Canadian scene, they're each more of a fire eater than their neighbor, haven't asked some fundamental questions here. It was Chrystia Freeland years back who she was asked, why doesn't Canada sign the nuclear non-proliferation, the elimination of nuclear weapons. It was a UN-based group trying to get countries to sign on for denuclearizing the system. And she said, we can't do that because, you see, we're under the American umbrella. I would say, if you think nuclear weapons is an umbrella, so you don't know the difference between a knife and an umbrella. We're in dangerous territory. And it used to be a time when Canada kind of talked about itself, reminded everybody we're a middle power, not a superpower. And middle powers have a role. But we've seemed to have moved on from this. And what permits that, I suppose, is the triumphalism of NATO, which following the demise of the Soviet Union, NATO, instead of going away and giving us a peace dividend, it decided that it should be big and strong and go where it wanted to go, not just North Atlantic, but wherever it wants to go. And Canada did not debate that, to my knowledge. I'm not aware of a politician who is noted for questioning the expansion of NATO. Yet, again, for our own health and the health of our neighbors and safety of the world, that should have been debated, and it should be debated right now, rather than to say, we don't have an opinion. We fly around and have our pictures taken, but we don't call the president of Russia. We don't do that because that's a prerogative of this Frankenstein that we created, which doesn't seem to have ears. And its voice sounds like Joe Biden, but we're locked into that. And so when we say, well, we're doing diplomacy, no, they're not doing diplomacy. They're only talking to people, to states, fellow states, who follow in the tail along behind the superpower, the US. And that isn't diplomacy. That's just photo ops and dangerous conversations, I would say. We will be asked to do some things, and none of them very pleasant. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. President Zelensky is going to be talking on Tuesday, they say, to the Canadian Party. We'll see if it all comes off. I mentioned whether it all comes off, I was struck by something. And that is that Zelensky asked to speak to the United States. Well, he was speaking, they said, to the United States Congress. That actually isn't true. The U.S. didn't, Congress did not go into session and hear him. He actually had a very, he had a talk with 202 members of the U.S. Congress, and it was not a public talk. I only found that out on Sunday. I was looking into it. Seemed odd. He also is asking, and so far has not received agreement to speak to the Israeli Knesset. And this is one of the conundrums that our authorities on Cold Wars haven't explained to us. Two countries were cheek by jowl and at dagger's point, Israel and Syria, neither one seem to want to get involved. Well, they certainly are not getting involved with the U.S. Sanctions and with trying to form some kind of cobble together a wider military commitment to President Zelensky. He also asked to speak to the Holocaust Center, Yad Vashem in Israel, and did not receive agreement about that. They've given him some options, but I'm telling that simply because it shows we're in new territory here with this crisis. All the people who usually line up at the appropriate spots and say the appropriate things are not there for this. And that should make everyone be cautious, which is why I highlighted the idea of democracy in Canada. That is a debate about what NATO's doing and whether or not there will be a wider war, which, as I say, the fire eaters are basically carrying a banner now and on practically on every street corner, which is not going to help matters. President Zelensky may talk on Tuesday. I suppose he will. And I have a question about his situation. I wonder if Mr. Zelensky would be permitted by NATO and his friends to enter into actual conversations with Russia over a de-escalation and a negotiated end to the combat, whether you say he's a victim of this attack or whether or not there were many parties that played a role in it, all that is, can they talk? And can there be a resolution? Because so far, Zelensky's stock has risen to the extent to which he has been asking for more weapons, and to the extent that he has indicated that the fighting will go on, and so he is celebrated in Western capitals. I just wonder if he were to say, I'm going into direct negotiations, whether that same support would be there. I would say he's in a tight spot. You know, somebody who's helped out very much in our understanding, I believe, of this is Oliver Stone. And there seems to be a dispute about this, but Oliver Stone made a documentary called Ukraine on, I think, Ukraine on Fire, in which he tried to understand how the current crisis, the origins of this ongoing crisis. And I have not seen it all. I urge everybody to see it, because everybody I talk to, I respect, tells me it's brilliant. I did see some segments of it. Certainly, he talked to major players, and not all of them are widely reported on in our media, which is our media's failure. It's them that have caused us to be, you know, they worry about our being disinformed and they're misinformed. But, you know, when you don't report what somebody says, you're blocking it. So Oliver Stone, I think if you go to, I'm told that if you go to Rumble is making that documentary available. I think people should see it. A person that's featured in it is Victoria Nuland. And she, Victoria Nuland, last week I closed the show by mentioning something which people, I know everybody finds fascinating. And that was that I closed the show last week talking about how Venezuela had been visited by high-ranking Americans. And they were visiting the president. And it turned out not to be Juan Guaido, turned out to be President Maduro. Well, she got asked about that by Senator Rubio. Rubio is a right-wing Cuban-American who has devoted his life to trying to overthrow the government of Cuba. He loves sanctions. He loves to harm them in any way possible he can do. Anyway, he was asking her about the issue of, at the end, close of his interview, he asked her about biological labs / weapons / research, whatever you want to say. But then he transitioned to the issue of Venezuela, which I thought was, I want to make sure I mention here. He said, the administration's officials visited President Maduro. Did they notify the, he said, I'll put it as a question. Do we still recognize Guaido as the president? And she said, yes, he still has, she had some sort of muddy answer. Yes, he said, but they met with President Maduro, the corrupt dictator Maduro. And he said, and then he said, did they notify President Guaido of that they were doing this? And she said, yes, they did. And he said, no, they didn't. And I have information, they did not. And then she said, I accept that. It must have been the day after, but they did talk to him. The day after, he said, yes, they contacted him after they talked to Maduro. And that was, I took that, that was a very interesting exchange. Certainly it bothered Rubio, and anything that bothers Rubio cheers me up, but on the other matter, something, a very serious issue, and the U.S. is very uncomfortable with this subject, and that's the issue of bio labs. And there's no dispute, apparently, and she, because, well, Rubio said to her, are there biological labs? And I think he said weapons, and maybe in the question, in Ukraine, and she said Ukraine has bio labs for research, and she said we're very concerned that these might fall into the hands of the Russians. Then he said, Rubio said, if there were to be biological weapons used, is there any doubt in your mind that it would actually be the Russians? And she said, no, Senator, 100%. And she said it would be part of, it would be classic Russian tactics. And I think she might have used, they have two terms they all like to use, Russian playbook and classic Russian tactics. However, Cat was out of the bag for the rest of us that, there are 26, they say, bio labs of some type in Ukraine. Now, the World Health Organization is saying that they contacted Ukraine on the on the 24th, when Russian forces entered Ukraine. And they said, you should destroy the contents of those labs. But, well, they said the toxins, the dangerous ones, should be destroyed. Now, the Toronto Star, CBC, everybody's trying to say, whoa, the Russians are disinformation and whatnot. Well, I don't know anything about what they're thinking, what they know, because I think all this is right in front of us as information. So the question, destroy them. And we're talking about toxins, really dangerous biomaterial. How do we know if they, first of all, who said they did it? Two, how do we know that? And doesn't this raise the issue, which is a 20-year-old issue, I believe, of at being raised at the between states who want to control the chemical biological weapons. Shouldn't we have a treaty? And shouldn't the Americans sign it? Shouldn't they participate? And yes, of course, by the way, they did. They have some connection to those labs. But if we want to take it out of the Ukraine arena, we can put it in the world. There are, according to the Chinese and others, there are 300 labs, American labs, in 30 countries. 336, this is their claim. U.S. has, this is just a claim. The U.S. has 336 biological labs in 30 countries under its control. Then the Chinese spokesman said, 336, you heard me right. It also conducted many biological military activities at the Fort Detrick base at home. What is their intentions? What has it done specifically? The U.S. has been standing alone in obstructing the establishment of a biological weapons convention, verification mechanism. Notice we say verification. Who said they told them to knock, to kill those, to get rid of that, the toxic material? And this calls, this motion, argument calls for verification mechanism. You remember Ronald Reagan used to say, trust, but verify. I don't know if you heard about Ronald Reagan. He was second president after George Washington. Verification mechanism. And refusing verification of its biological facilities at home and abroad for the past two decades. I wonder if the Americans say that's true. I give them room to say it. But that's for the rest of us who have our ears pricked up. You better pay attention. 336 labs, you don't want to belong to or have a biological weapons convention verification mechanism. That's you. That'd be boss of NATO. This is serious stuff. And that is not presuming to know anything about what was going on here. But I would say when they try to put on a face and say, oh, everybody knew about this stuff. I don't think so. And biological weapons are nothing to play with. I'll tell you how I know that. When the United States was on the verge of bombing Syria in 2014, Obama and Hillary Clinton had pretty much decided they were going to do it. They said they were going to do it. Actually, when they said no fly, they also indicated they would begin to bomb. Because, you know, when you say no fly, we found out in Libya, what they meant by no fly was that they fly over and then they bomb your Air Force, even though your Air Force may have agreed to stay on the ground just to be sure they bomb your Air Force, which is what they did in Libya. So in this case, Obama and Hillary Clinton were right on the verge, with Hillary banging the drum, to establishing a no-fly zone, because they said they had information that Syria possessed chemical and biological weapons. And so Russia, look at the storyline. Russians stepped in and said, well, we'd be happy to be the mediator. And if Syria has those weapons, we will help them dispose of it. So Syria said, okay, we do have them. And they did then, with supervision, dispose of it. That would be verification. You got my point? Verification. They disposed of those biological weapons, that biological material. Well, and that was going to be the basis of bombing by the U.S. Well, the U.S. stepped back and decided, okay, we're not going to bomb because of that. But they went on in various other ways. But you see how seriously they took the matter? And they were prepared to bomb somebody, as they had done with shock and awe in Iraq, when, of course, in that case, they were lying. They said that a sovereign country had was on the verge of doing something. You notice, you see, they didn't go to war. They were doing a rescue mission. US never goes to war with anybody. They're like, when they bombed, when they used shock and awe and blasted everything they could find in Syria, when they blasted everything they could find in Afghanistan, each time they weren't at war, you see. But now they talk very sanctimoniously about Russia. This is the problem of hypocrisy. So I think that we're being led down into a narrow canyon politically, and Canada had better wake up, and people who claim to represent the people should get on their hind legs and see how much danger we are all in. This has been the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. We'll see you next week.